WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
James Earl Jones has a voice that conveys power and authority. He was the voice of Darth Vader in Star Wars. He's the voice of Verizon and CNN. So it's surprising to read in his memoir about all the trouble his voice has caused him. Terry spoke with James Earl Jones in 1993 when his memoir Voices and Silences first came out. A new edition has just been published. In it, Jones writes about his personal life and his career on stage in such plays as The Blood Knot, The Great White Hope, Othello, and Fences, in films such as Field of Dreams, Coming to America, and Summersby, and on TV, including his own series, Gabriel's Fire. Jones grew up in rural Mississippi. His family moved to Michigan when he was still a boy. In retrospect, he credits this uprooting with causing his stutter. As a child, the stutter was very bad. In fact, there was a period between the ages of 6 and 14 when he barely spoke at all.
I did the basics. I was able to function as a farm kid, doing all those chores where you call animals. I think I had my best conversations with the dog, who was a good friend of mine and didn't challenge me in any way. I certainly let the family know what my needs were. But when strangers came to the house, the mute happened. I didn't want to confront them, and I wasn't ready. I hid in the state of muteness.
Did you not want to speak, or did you feel physically unable to speak?
It was just too embarrassing.
Because of the stutter?
And too difficult, yeah.
Well, what were some of the things that adults or friends did to try to coax you to talk more?
No, they left me alone. My family had a habit of letting me have my way a lot when it came to sometimes major life decisions. But when it was about me, they let me decide. And that was one of them, when I wanted to leave the church, leave Sunday school, leave the religion, because of the stuttering and because of the kids laughing. They accepted that.
Even though your grandmother was very religious.
Oh, boy, was she ever. She's, she was a triple born again.
Can you tell us the story of how you started speaking again?
Donald Crouch was an associate of...
Donald Crouch was your teacher?
Yeah, Robert Frost. He was a college professor, but he ended up in this high school because he retired. He was a Mennonite farmer, and he retired to his farm in Brethren, Michigan. And the idea that there were kids down the road at this high school who were studying Chaucer and Shakespeare and stuff, he couldn't stand it. So he came back and taught high school, he was the first English teacher I had. Not see, I'm stuttering again. He was the first English teacher I had, and he accepted that I wasn't verbal, that I wasn't oral, but he didn't like the idea that I could privately, subjectively enjoy poetry and not sound it out loud. He one day discovered that I wrote poetry, and he said to me, "This poem is so good, I don't think you really wrote it. I think you plagiarized it," which was a shock to me. And I could admit that it was Longfellow-esque, but it was not certainly stolen from Longfellow. And he said, "The way you can prove it to me that you wrote it was to get up in front of the class and recite it by heart." And I accepted the challenge and did it, and we both realized then we had a means, we had a way of regaining the power of speech through reading poetry.
Mm-hmm. So how does the stutter come back very much for you?
You've heard it several times mm-hmm. now. It's always with me, and I have to be careful not to talk too fast.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly becomes a problem whenever I do something emotional, whether in real life or as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I hit an emotional speech, whether it's a positive emotion or a negative,
Joy
or pain. That often leads to overload, and I have to be very careful. There was a time when my acting was affected by it. I think Gladys Vaughn was the first to notice it. She says, when you get emotional, when your Othello, for instance, gets emotional, I sometimes believe you less. And it's because I'm being too careful. You can't measure out emotion. It has a flow.
Has your Othello ever stuttered?
No, none of my characters have I studied except for the very first thing I did on Broadway. I played the role of Edward, FDR's houseboy, valet, as a young man. I had the line, Mrs. Roosevelt, supper is served. And I got hung on the mama word.
Yeah.
And it is funny, isn't it? But because it's so ridiculous. Mary Thicket, who was playing Eleanor Roosevelt, was very patient. She just stood there and let me get through it. She knew, the audience knew that something was wrong, but she didn't want to embarrass me any further by saying my line for me.
Right.
So she let me have my moment. I got through it, and it's never happened since.
What was it like in your early days as an actor, before you had the reputation, before you were James Earl Jones? And you'd go and talk to a casting director, and you'd be stuttering when talking to them, and then you'd have to somehow convince them that on stage you were going to be fine. I mean, casting directors, I'm sure, are pretty insecure about that kind of thing.
No, there was never a problem. I don't know why, but it never was. Marlon Brando and all the method actors had made stuttering a part of the way Americans talk.
Oh, a part of, like, emotional truth that you're grasping so hard for that truth. I think some of the advice that your voice teacher gave you was to not use the full power of your voice, just to save some of it in reserve.
Well, that's just good acting. Once you take your character to the limit, the audience can tell that he has no more. There's nothing in reserve, and they get less interested. There's less suspense about what you're going to do next, you know?
So do you know where your limit is and how to go just short of that?
I just got off the set of a show we did in Richmond, Virginia. And the very last day, I remember yelling at the director for the first time. I wanted to yell at him a lot, but I was rehearsing a scene with Mary Alice, in which...
I like her a lot.
Yeah, me too. And I felt lucky that she was able to join that cast, playing my wife again, playing Mrs. Altona Johns to my Vernon Johns. And she was going up the stairs, having admitted that she just allowed our oldest daughter to get on a segregated bus. And in my outrage, I flip out about it. Well, in my rehearsal, I flipped out to the peak of my voice, and the director was about to say, I don't think it should be that loud. I said, shut up, leave me alone, let us find our way. You know, and I was very rude to him. But he was about to remind me that you can't do it at the peak. You got to leave something in reserve, and I knew that. But sometimes I have to test the walls myself, test the you know, what the space can hold myself, you know, and not go on a theory.
So when you were yelling at the director, were you using the full power?
yeah. I tested the limits of the set with him too. Yeah.
Now, your father was an actor. He was a boxer first, then he became an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like your family wasn't really proud of that. I mean, you were raised by your grandparents. They didn't seem at all proud.
They would have been proud. They became later proud of Joe Louis. I think my grandfather was secretly proud of Jack Johnson as he was of Satchel Paige, the baseball player.
What about the acting part of his career? It sounds like you're...
What I'm getting at is they just didn't understand it.
Right.
It was hard enough for them to understand a prize fighter making a real honest living.
Yeah.
Much less a troubadour actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just not within the comprehension. These are people who we got our life from the soil. And I'm very proud of that. I shared that kind of life with them, but they had no way of understanding Robert Earl, and were very intolerant of him, and very resistant to my ever meeting him. I didn't get to meet him until I was 21, until I was legal age, and my mother was a part of that too. It was a very bad marriage, and which I tried to explain in the book and tried to show both sides.
I guess that's part of the reason why you ended up being brought up by your grandparents.
That was the reason they. My mother wanted to be a single mother, but my grandmother knew better, that during the Depression it was hard enough for her, a 20-year-old girl, to manage her own life, and she insisted that she found a way to adopt me.
In your memoir, Voices and Silences, you devote a total of about a paragraph to Star Wars, to your voice as Darth Vader. And I got the impression that it's not something you really want to call that much attention to.
Are you kidding? Not true. It's just that I have very little to talk about.
Okay.
Had I been one of the actors and given points, I would not only be wealthy, I'd be probably much better known.
Got a flat fee?
Oh, yeah. I think George Lucas, first of all, realized that although David Prowse was the actor he wanted, it was not the sound he wanted. So he searched around for a technically and symbolically a darker voice.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually came to me and said to Lucy, would Jenny like to earn a day's salary? The job took 2.5 hours. They paid me all of $9,000, which was not bad for 2.5 hours of work.
Right.
None of us knew what we had,
right. You
know, and that was fine. Almost not out of embarrassment, but out of his his non-traditional capitalism or lack of capitalism, George gave me a Christmas bonus that amounted to the same amount of money. But I was just acting as special effects. That's all that was.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I was having done the Great White Hope film. I'd become a member of the board of directors of the Oscar board, you know, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, at a time when the controversy over whether Mercedes McCambridge deserved credit for contributions to the Linda Blair's voice, the devil coming
in The Exorcist.
Yeah, in The Exorcist. And I thought there was a silly argument that I said to myself that all the Mercedes is special effects. And I wanted to keep that clear in my case, so I didn't even take credit for the voice of Darth Vader.
Forgive me, I know this is a small part of your career, but I have to ask you about the CNN voice. The first time someone said to me, you know, I think that's James Earl Jones, I said, nah. You know, there was no way they were right. Why did you decide to take that on when you were offered it?
You asked me what is the Star Wars involvement meant to me. What it did, it made my voice viable in the commercial world. But I don't know why. Really, I avoided that great way to make a living and great craft unto itself. But the Star Wars sort of put my name on the A list, as they say out there, for authoritative voices.
So your attitude was, why not take advantage of it?
My attitude?
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, why kick something that's going to sit on your lap out of the house? I mean, I think the first commercials I did, one for Chrysler and one for Goodyear and one for Fisher products, audio products. And they asked me to just give us the sound of God. Goodyear Vector tires, you know. Let God sell Goodyear Vector tires.
No problem.
They were not embarrassed about saying that, you know.
So, do you have a voice of yours that you think of the voice of God?
No. It just to sound as let it go as bass as it can go and still be clear.
Yeah.
And to sound like I mean it. There's not a product I've ever promoted that I don't use, including Wells Lamont gloves, working man's gloves.
And of course, the Yellow Pages.
And Ruben's dinners out in Ruben's chain of restaurants. Orson Welles and Vincent Price and I were once asked to simply, on a recording, read the menu. With as much slobbering, lustful sounds as we can conjure. And we got paid for it.
Well, James Earl Jones, I thank you so much for talking with us. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you immensely.
Thank you.
James Earl Jones, speaking with Terry Gross in 1993. His memoir, Voices and Silences, is out in a new paperback edition. This is Fresh Air.